The Vietnam War era was a time of certainly of conflict and rage on America's college campuses. That was especially true here at the UW-Madison. Hi, Larry Mueller here. You know, that time, it reached a boiling point, I think, on August 24th, 1970, when Sterling Hall was bombed as a protest against the university's research connections with the U.S. military, and it resulted in the death of University of Wisconsin physics researcher Robert Fosnock and injured three other people. And while three of the four bombers were brought to justice, Leo Burt remains at large. And that mystery is one of the topics of this new novel we're going to talk about today, Death on Cache Lake. And we're lucky to have in the studio with us Dan Wall. He is formerly a public school teacher, principal, and superintendent. He has extensive technical rock climbing experience, and he's has a sense of Devil's Tower, the Half Dome, El Capitan. And I don't think he's climbing as much right now, but he continues as a competitive cyclist as well. Lives in River Falls, Wisconsin, and co-wrote this book. And I'm really great, really gratified and happy to have you with us, Dan. Thanks for taking time.
Thanks a lot, Larry. I want to say hi from River Falls, Wisconsin, particularly Dr. Jim Bikes, retired. He's a bluebird fan, prolific builder of bluebird nest, and your biggest fan. And he said, Dan, you've got to find a way to get on that show. So River Falls says hi.
Well, here you are. And I tell you what, I read your book, and I really enjoyed it. And I want to, before we even get talking about it, I want to mention that you co-wrote this book with a special person who's no longer with us, and I think we should just mention that to get...
Yes.
And that person, and talk a little bit about that person.
John Lyon was my life friend. In 1972, I was hired at the Sauk Prairie School District. I was a rookie teacher. I met another young man who said, come over to my house tonight. We'll cook up some hamburger and beans. And John took over everything, and he was that kind of guy who had a big heart and did everything for everyone. He was my life friend, and to get to the end of the story, long story short, we shared a love of mysteries. We would trade back and forth our John McDonald's and Robert Parker's, and I knew he loved to read. I never knew he could write. About 1984, I wrote a 20-page vignette about a murder mystery, a drama on Cache Lake. I gave it to John. A year later, he sent it back to me in a 100-page manuscript. There was my vignette wrapped in a novel that he had created. We worked on it to the millennium. It was as good as it was going to get, and it wasn't good enough. We realized that the plot device was cliche, hackney, done before, a drug smuggling thing. You know, they say, write what you know. We threw that out when I realized there was a real mystery in Wisconsin that no one would has solved while we're trying to construct one. We kept the good stuff about rock climbing and trucks and canoeing, put that in. Bob's your uncle. Unfortunately, toward the end of the book, John's health failed, and it was almost a race to the finish line. When they found John, he had the book in his lap. He had the first draft in his lap. And I remember John. If the book makes any money, I've seen that half of it goes to his kids. He was a wonderful friend.
Dan Wall is our guest today, author with John Lyon of Death on Cache Lake. You can join in. Maybe you have some questions about this. Were you living in Wisconsin when Sterling Hall was bombed, or maybe you heard about it elsewhere? What impact do you think it might have had on resistance to the Vietnam War? Certainly we'll talk about his book and how that factors in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. I'd love to hear from you. Saston, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, with us first with a comment or a question. Sast, hi.
How you doing? Larry, good to talk with you.
Well, thanks for being with us. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling in regards to the book that Dr. Wall wrote, and I'm from the East Coast in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I was told that there was a guy that went to University of Delaware a number of years ago that wrote this book, and they said it was very exciting, and I purchased it, and it is a great book. And then I have a few questions for the author.
Oh, okay. What's on your mind?
Well, I need to know where he got, other than the, you know, the bombing, where he got his ideas and you know, it's a fiction book for the writing of the book.
Yeah.
I want to say I recognize this voice. I spent 2 years teaching in an inner city school in Philadelphia with a Polish kid from Pottstown, and this sounds familiar. But it's
a good question. It's a good question.
It's a good question, and the one thing I'd like to say, because I want to get on the right track, is Sterling Hall is the plot device in the book. Yeah. The book's not about Sterling Hall any more than Stephen King's book 11/23/63 is about Oswald and Kennedy.
Yeah,
it's really a vehicle to talk about friendship. And they say in our absolute realm of our imagination, we're always young. It's a way to bring back a time that people are forgetting. And there's also a little coming together and a reminder that there was a time when we could talk to each other. When I was in Madison toward the end of the 60s, and Larry knows this just from talking same time, we'd lost the ability to talk to each other like now. I remember my spring semester, people would walk out of classes. I had a philosophy of religion class, and the communist walked out one day. I had a black history class, and Eugene Parks and his friends walked out. And every group had a problem with every other group. And then I went to the inner city, and the National Guard was in Wilmington, Delaware, after Martin Luther King. Finally, I came out to little bucolic Sauk City, and all of a sudden I saw a mix of Vietnam vets, kids with long hairs, farmers with red necks, hunters with guns and gun racks, all parked together on Friday night on Water Street in Sauk City, sitting together in the bars, talking to each other. And part of that small-town feel in the book is what we wanted to recapture. So it's a good question, but this book was a way of talking about friendship, loyalty, and communication.
And I'm telling you, the that a lot of the book, this is really fascinating to me, takes place in Canada, in sort of the wilds of Canada. And I just love that portion of the book. It's exciting, and the relationships that you talk about there seem really very real.
You know, one thing I will say that John and I discussed is some of the things that they do, going to town for the party, are not rational, but what makes us human isn't really our reason, it's our emotions. And I always remember something John said to me in the 70s, and he said, if you came to the end of the line emotionally and financially, and you were even contemplating suicide, why wouldn't you just try anything? And that was sort of a feeling of Caleb and John, the protagonist, as they do things that seem a little risky and irrational, is a belief that, you know, celebrate the temporary, like Al McGuire said. Just move on. When you're going through hell, keep going. And that feeling is in the book, too.
Yeah, it definitely. Zess, thanks for calling.
Well, yeah, and I have one other question, Larry, before you go to another caller. I know Dan's was an avid mountain climber, but where did he get his experience paddling on the river or the lakes that maybe were key parts of the book?
Yeah, that's a good question, too.
Just real quick, I've spent a lot of time up there, and Madison is a huge water sports city, so if there are any canoers listening in Madison, this won't be news to them. There is a real cache lake. It's in the northwest quadrant of Quetico National Provincial Park. It's unrivaled in its isolated splendor and beauty, and it's a real place, and I've been there.
Been there. Thank you so much, Zess, for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Appreciate it very, very much. And so maybe we should, before we go back to the phones, maybe we should sort of outline the plot itself in sort of general terms to tell so people understand kind of what's going on.
The plot concerns a young teacher in a small town in Wisconsin. It's informed by a real town. You can figure it out by yourself. But his life is falling apart, domestic ennui, a divorce, difficult situations, and he's lost track with a friend who was kind of a wild man who had gone up north to pursue exploits in the mountains and the lakes,
mm-hmm.
and he had heard that the friend gets in trouble in Canada on a murder charge. At the same time, John, in this little Wisconsin town, receives the word that he's going to lose his job. He gets a complicated message from Canada indicating his friend is on the lam up north. He goes up north to find his friend. This leads him into a larger conspiracy that ties into the possibility of connections and a conspiracy in the Sterling Hall bombing. And
I'm telling you, it's a fascinating story. And by the way, I should remind you, the title of the book is Death on Cache Lake. Dan Wall and John Lyon, the authors. Dan's with me in the studio, and great to have him along. And certainly thank you so much for listening in. If you have a question or comment about the book or about that time period, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And we're going to go to Rick and Owen in just a second, but you do have a theory in the book on what happened to Leo Burt, and we don't want to spoil that. I don't want to spoil that, so don't want to go into the details, but that theory, did that just come from you and John sitting around talking and hashing it back and forth and what might have happened to him?
That's a really good question. This book would not exist without John. It wouldn't exist without me either. It was a perfect yin and yang. But the parts that John brought, if you see parts about trains, if you see parts about cooking, if you see parts about small towns, he was a small town guy from McQuantico. A lot of that's John. The Madison stuff came from me, and that was the central plot device. It's important that I mention, though, that it's not a work of research. There's no citations in this because I was not part of the violence, but anybody who was on campus in the spring of 70, think about it. There was Kent State. There was Jackson State. I want to say there was the Black Strike. There was the TA Strike. Then came Cambodia. The Natatorium was occupied by National Guard troops, and I think if there are any young listeners today, they probably can't imagine what I'm describing, but I counted up once. I missed 6 weeks of class that semester, and so much anger. And the other thing I remember is that people who were more involved than I were, there was a tremendous paranoia and a tremendous belief that the FBI had infiltrated and inserted SDS meetings and anti-war meetings and even moderate anti-war meetings. There's a tremendous belief about that. So this book comes from my personal recollections with people who knew people. And did I know Leo Burt? I'm not sure. I was a swimmer. He was a rower. I kind of think I was in the weight room with him once or twice. I certainly didn't know him personally. After the fact, I came across two things that kind of document it. Rads by Tom Bates, and then an article in Mother Jones that actually alleges what we imagined did happen.
Very interesting. Dan Wall, our guest, looking forward to hearing what you have to say. The number again, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking with Wisconsin author Dan Wall, former public school teacher. He has extensive experience in rock climbing and bicycling, and he's author with John Lyon of the book Death on Cache Lake, a fascinating book. And I hope you have a chance to look at it, and certainly you'll have a chance to ask him questions if you join us at 800-642-1234. Rick and Owen, let's turn to you now. Thanks for waiting. Hi.
Good morning. You know, there's so many things I want to talk about. Cut me off when you had enough. The one thing I want to talk about is how this is an everlasting story. You know, you talk about 1970. That's forever ago. But I have a sister that worked with the daughter of Fosnick. I had a brother that was a researcher alongside of him. So those things last on forever. So, you know, you talk about things that happened way back when. Well, those are still living with us to this day. And, well, I'll leave that behind. But then you talk about Dan writing about what he knows. I know Dan from many years ago, and then been able to renew that friendship through the years here. And when he wrote about the Barneveld tornado, and that's bringing in something new, but you could feel about how he interacted with people and knows those stories. And you say about the dialogue working when you were reading it, Larry, and that's absolutely true, that he's able to bring out something special about it. And that's how he is in real life, too, because everyone that I talk about Dan with say what an incredible human being. And so that's really exciting. And then he writes about all the things that I love, biking and hiking, and I happen to be involved in education, so that fits in this. So there's so many strands that are so incredibly interesting, and it's just exciting to be able to read the book and hear some of the things that the way he's able to project it. And I really like hearing him talk about it. And maybe he can just talk about some of those everlasting connections. You know, when I talk about people are still, there's people still affected by it to this day.
Yeah. And I just as an aside say that when I saw that your book came out, I had read your writings about Barneveld, and I thought, this guy's a great writer. We've got to get a hold of his book and read that book and get him on the show. So, Rick and Owen, I kind of go along with you, but you want to comment on Dan on what Rick was talking about there, connections?
Well, it takes me into a tangent that I hoped I could get into Wisconsin writers, because why do a couple people call me from different parts of the states and they know me? One of the things I love about Wisconsin, I think it's like a small town. Mm-hmm. And particularly being in education, I don't think you could pick a town that one way or the other, I don't know somebody. And especially yields benefits in terms of the writing community. And if I do nothing else on this show, I want to thank you for the work you do with the Wisconsin writing community. And I would just say that a lot of the good writing that I've done is built on the shoulders of better writers before me and some great contemporary writers. And they're so nice to each other. Sarah Rath in Spring Green has been extremely kind to me. Going back and forth. I don't pretend to know Michael Perry real well, but I've been very impressed with him, and I've met him. We're so lucky in this state. I lived in Hammond for a while. Mary Ruinda's Ellis was my down-the-street neighbor when she was writing Turtle Warrior, and she would take a couple minutes every now and then to talk to me about writing. Doug Moe gave me my first review. You've got August Derleth. And you could just go, although I would go beyond him and Aldo Leopold and say John Muir would be my favorite Wisconsin nature writer. So the thing that, I don't know where Rick was going with this, but the thing I appreciate is he's calling from Owen, Wisconsin, and I love how this state is together, and I love the writing community, and I guess I want to go back one more time to that Vukalik interview you did with Doug Moe and Mr. Vukalik's son. If I were king, that would be required listening for every Wisconsin high school English class.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, and Rick, I thank you so much for your comments. And Jan in Sauk County, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Jan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
I was a cook at Tower Rock School, and my son just recently gave me Dan's book for Christmas.
Oh.
And I am halfway through it, and I just love it. I love the short stories. I like the points of interest I'm familiar with, and so glad to know Dan and John.
Ah, well, that's an well, it's kind of what you were talking about just a couple of seconds ago, really, Dan. Here's Jan in Sauk County. We've had people all over the state and even mm-hmm. outside the state calling in who know you.
Mm-hmm. I started my career in Sauk Prairie, and that community is still real close to me. I'm trying to – I'm really pleased with these little calls, but I didn't solicit them. But they all bring up something about the book. Jan reminds me of Tower Rock. It was my first gig as a teaching principal. And I was from the East Coast, and I had hair down to my shoulders and a Norton motorcycle and kind of a bad attitude and an adrenaline fix. And yet I went out there, and these farm folks largely and their kids, they got past that because they knew I liked kids, and it was just one of the most wonderful experiences mm-hmm. in my life working with those kids in this little Tower Rock, which is out Highway PF toward Leland, if you ever go that way. And there, I'm reminded we used to have teacher conferences, and people would, this is 1972, this is how times have changed. People would bring their uncased rifles into the classrooms, prop them up in the corner, and come over and sit down next to me and have their kids' conference, and we wouldn't think anything of it. I sometimes wonder if 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds who read my book feel that it's has some verisimilitude without remembering a time when you had to get an operator to make a long-distance call or when the truck sat on the streets with uncased rifles in the gun racks. And so in a way, I'm doing what King did in 11-23-63. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a time in my life that was very dear to me and personal to me. And there's something in that book, if you read it, whether it's the old storekeeper in Dryden or the little town of Winchester about, boy, I wish we could get back to that way where we all talk together again.
Yeah, wonderful. Jan, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it very much. Carl in Lone Rock, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. I'm just kind of calling in to let your author there know that the search for Leo Burke is still ongoing. I actually had the FBI show up at my place of business about a year ago, and they had a lot of questions for me because somebody had I suspect that whoever called to tell them that they thought I might be Leo Burke had seen a newspaper article because I moved my small business from Madison out here where I live now, and I've been involved with the canoe and kayak business for a long time, since I was about 15, which is how old I was. I got into it when I was 16, but when I was 15 is when the Sterling Hall bombing happened. But I suspect that people connected the fact that Leo Burt was real active on the rowing team at UW. And I later, actually in 88, tried out for the Olympic flatwater kayaking team, Olympic team. And I think that when I moved my business out here, the State Journal came out and did an article on my little business out here, and they took some pictures of me that showed up in the article, and I kind of wonder if somebody connected dots there.
Yeah.
And they you know they so there's still an active search for Leo Burke going on.
Yeah, Carl, thanks a lot for calling. And you're probably aware of that, Dan.
Yeah, I don't know about Lone Rock, but I'll tell you one story. Is after the fact, I started hearing that I'd touched a nerve, and I dug up a few crew guys who are now in their 60s, and I talked to them. And one in particular was very leery about talking to me. And then some of my friends vetted me to him, and he did talk to me, and he talked to me about Leo. And I said, what was the problem? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you want to talk to me? He said, well, a couple of years ago, and we're talking maybe 5 years ago from now, he said, I got a call from a guy just like you who was writing a book, and he wanted to know about Leo Burt. And I talked to him for a while, and then he started to ask questions like, well, gee, if he got a hold of you now, how would you send him money? And he said, I'm kind of uncomfortable with this call. I think I'm going to hang up. And the caller said, well, not really. I'm special agent in charge so-and-so, and we're going to be out to see you. And they were fishing, and he got investigated by the FBI. So I would agree with the caller that the fact of the matter is it's still very much matter of interest.
Carl, thanks again for calling. Rich in Sauk City, it's your turn. Rich, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thanks for being with us. What's on your mind?
Well, I lived in Madison at the time of the bombing. We used to hitchhike to Kohl's to work every night. We would sit on the corner of Park Street and University Avenue.
Yeah.
There were many nights that we were picked up by different people, but Carlton Armstrong and his brother had picked us up numerous times. I remember Carlton, I think, drove a white Ford Falcon convertible, if I remember right. My roommate at the time was pretty radical and into this kind of stuff, but I was a little naive and just out of high school. But we lived up on Langdon Street, and the night of the bombing, the house just shook, so we went racing out in our bare feet, raced down Langdon Street, over to State Street, where all the windows were blown out of State Street, ran up Bascom Hill, and we were the second and third person at the scene. There was one other girl that was standing there. Ash was coming out of the windows. You could see the floors of the whole place were blown to pieces, but the fire department showed up a little later on and started working on it. The next day, they started looking for the people that did the bombing, and when the pictures were posted in the newspaper of the suspects, I recognized every one of them from times that we were picked up hitchhiking.
Wow. There's
Sauk City is very central to that whole story. There was an attempt to bomb the Baraboo Munitions Plant by stealing a plane from Middleton, and Dwight flew the airplane with something like 24 hours of training in the winter, and they threw some bombs out that didn't go off. They landed the plane in Sauk City Airport. Denman Kramer, if the caller knows from Sauk City, was a very close friend of John Lyon and a supervisor at the dam, and he told us about finding dynamite charges on the dam. So Sauk City is quite central to that story.
Very interesting. Rich, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. A lot of us have experiences and memories of that night and that next day. Dan Wall, our guest today, author with John Lyon of the book Death on Cache Lake. Fascinating book. Dan's, by the way, his last name is spelled W-O-L-L, Dan Wall, and the book Death on Cache Lake. Lois in Verona, hi, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I remember this quite well. I worked in Bascom Hall in the graduate admissions office. And I worked with Frosnick's wife, and it was quite devastating to us to find this out. And he usually did his research late at night, and apparently they thought the building was empty, and it wasn't. And I remember, too, that there were times when the National Guard came to the campus, and they thought that the buildings were all closed, and our office was open, and I believe it was the only one that was open that day.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody came up from the back of the hill and told us that we needed to vacate, so we should go down the front of the hill. And so we did, and as we were going down, the National Guard was coming up and was firing tear gas into our group. And we dispersed, and one of the gals that worked with us, her husband was a law student, and we went and sat in on some law classes that day because they were still holding classes. But
wow.
I find this book, I haven't read it yet, but I sure do want to go out and get it and read this. But those were some devastating times for many people.
Yeah. Lois, thank you so much. They were devastating times and had a huge impact on everybody who was here, I think, and everybody who experienced that. William in Butamore, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me well?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I was, at the time of the bombing, was in New York City teaching in an inner city school. I did that for 2 years. And I protested against the war, and whether it was the right decision or not, somehow fangled my way through the system and was able to not go. Got an alternative service set aside, I think, as I recall, with a little bit of other wiggles thrown in. But I remember the letter that came from the Selective Service with the two dimes in it for my one-way trip down to the same induction place that Arlo Guthrie has in his movie. I'm climbing stairs, so I'm a little bit winded. But my question is, the Madison bombing seemed to be, for America, extremely, although we've had those incidences in the past, and bombing of J.P. Morgan Bank and the Hangars Club in New York, have really been quite different than the history of civil disobedience. And I'm wondering whether, Dr. Walls, you think, what effect do you think that the nonviolent disobedience, the protests, people going to Canada, conscientious objectors, et cetera, which I was turned down for by my local draft board, by the way. I'm wondering, what effect do you think that had on politics at large? And although the veterans get the attention that they deserve and some not the attention they deserve, I think I never felt antagonistic toward individuals. I knew too many that had to go into the Army then. But mm-hmm. I feel that, you know, their reasons or their rationales didn't take in the whole picture. And I think there were points that the conscientious objectors had, not only about the war, but about the relations, you know, the kind of fibbing that went on between government and rationalizing the, you know, the invasion, Tonkin Gulf Resolution, et cetera, Nixon, mm-hmm. Kissinger, and the bombing of Laos, that were really a great disservice to the country. And not, but the sacrifice the veterans made in that sense is even sadder.
Comments, Dan?
Well, it's a long question, but there's one piece in there that I've always wanted to answer, and that has to do with the sacrifices of the veterans. And I guess one thing I always wanted to say for the record is I certainly disagreed with the policies of the Vietnam War. However, there's, I think, a stereotype that's proliferated over the years that a lot of that anger was directed at the kids who had to serve. And I'm sure it did happen because you're always going to find individuals who do hateful things and crazy things. In my experience with the kids I went to school with in Madison, my own experience, there was anger and disagreement with the policy and with the war. The young men that went over there as soldiers, why would we disrespect them? They were my friends. The nicest kid I knew in high school, a kid I played football with, was killed in Vietnam. And the idea that the movement was disrespecting these young men, I'd always wanted the opportunity to say, at least from my perspective, I would debunk that. These were my friends. I didn't want them to be there. And I think it's a sad state. I'm not an expert on the subject beyond the fact that I lived through those tumultuous years.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your answer. It's a very good one, and I agree wholeheartedly with it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for calling, William. I appreciate your call and your comments. The book has so many layers to it. What's the main storyline for you? Is it the relationship?
I'm going to give you an answer from the department or redundancy department. The main story of the book is, Larry, it's a story. I love stories. I've always loved stories. When I started teaching, to tell the truth, I didn't know what I was doing. I had these inner city kids. They were all various levels. I didn't know what I was doing. So I read to them, and I read, and I read. And then when I got to Sauk City, that's all I knew. My pedagogy and teaching wasn't where it should be, but they liked it. And then I developed a style of reading, and toward the end, I think I was a pretty good teacher. I love stories. What's the Iliad? It's a story. What are the best books? So the main point of this book is a story, and a secondary piece of this book is this relationship between these two guys, and they don't know when the other shoe's going to drop, but isn't that kind of like life?
Yeah.
And you just keep going on with a passion. And Al McGuire, celebrate the temporary. Just live life with a passion and go for it. So it's a story, and it's about two friends.
Well, I tell you what, it's a wonderful story, and I want to thank you so much. Do you have some readings coming up, or I have,
this is a good point. Last thing I want to say about writing for, you know, younger writers out there, beginning writers, is you find doing what, I'm rereading Walden, because I went to Concord High School, Even back then, he's whining a little bit about the fact that the town fathers won't give him a sinecure to write. And he tells a parable of this Indian that's selling baskets and finds out he has to spend half his time convincing people that they need to sell the baskets. So Larry's question, am I doing readings? I'm doing them all the time. But the good news is I'm kind of a people guy, and I love going to the Somerset Library and talking to five people or the little bookstore in Black River Falls. There's this divine little liquor store on the north end of River Falls that sells more books than anybody. I love working with these people. So that's the cost of doing business when you're a beginning writer. And last thing, I know you're running out of time. I'll give you a name of an example of someone who's out there. There's so many great writers out there. I met a German woman, a mountain climber, who has a story that dwarfs that 127-hour story with the Aaron Ralston thing.
Yeah.
Her name is Isabelle Suppé. Google that story and look at the book she's trying to write. So writing's great. Wisconsin is the most underrated state in America for writers, and thanks to public radio for pushing it.
Well, thanks to you for writing Death on Cache Lake, and I hope we have a chance to meet again and talk again on the air, Dan. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much. It was wonderful. Death on Cache Lake by Dan Wall and John Lyon. Dan's name, last name spelled W-O-L-L. It's a great book. I really enjoyed reading it. And I think you're going to enjoy it, too. Really appreciate him taking the time to be with us today. And we're going to talk, we're going to stay with authors and talk with another author. Talking with Dan, really, it brought up so many memories of days past in Wisconsin. And coming up next, we're going to continue reminiscing, but about a very different aspect of our state's history. Willie Davis, who played for the Green Bay Packers under legendary coach Vince Lombardi, with us now. He's written a new memoir. We're going to hear about that and a whole lot more. So stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.